Good evening. For the record, my name is Melissa Galant, and I'm here in support of the proposed East Clearwater Highway. I moved to this city 11 years ago to make a better life for my family. This is my home. I have two children, 12 and 7, and 6 years ago, I moved my mother up here because her health was failing and she could no longer live alone. Up until May 3rd, I had sheltered my family to the news of what was going on in the city leading up to that day. But on that day from work, I made the call home to calmly tell my mother to go pick up my children early from school. With her dementia, she began to ask many questions. "Everything is fine," is what I told her. "Please just go and get them, bring them home to Timberley, which is where we live." I've left work shortly after, and by the time I got to Confed, traffic was not moving. I turned on the radio and quickly realized the reality I was facing. My plan was to go home, get my family, and head south to Edmonton, and then I received a call from my mom. I answered and immediately heard my children crying in the background. You see, my mother had also turned on the radio while picking up my children. Scared and confused, she decided to start driving south. Her plan was to drive to the Burger King in Gregoire and wait for me. And now she was also in traffic that was not moving. The difference was, I was stuck heading up Timberley home, and she was stuck heading up Beacon Hill. She was confused and hysterical. She told me fire was all around her. The trees were burning, the grass was burning, and fire was landing on her van. She told me how sorry she was for leaving home. She was only trying to keep my children safe. I remember in that moment the helplessness and hopelessness I felt in my soul. I could not get to them. I was her daughter and her caregiver, and I was their mother. And it was my job to protect them and keep them safe. They relied solely on me, and at that moment, I felt like a failure. I asked her to put me on speakerphone, and my 12-year-old son was crying, telling me how hot it was in the van and that they were going to burn. I told them not to cry, and it was going to be okay. I told them to close their eyes and keep them closed until Nanny had brought them home to me. I told them how brave they were, how brave everyone was, and how much I love them. I told my mom to drive through the fire, through the median, and head north. She was going to perish with my precious cargo in the back seat if she did nothing. The call dropped. I arrived home to an empty home, not knowing if I was going to have a family to even pack for. I sat on the step waiting. I waited 103 minutes before I saw my mother pull into the driveway. My vehicle had ash on it. The trunk was melted closed. I opened the back seat to see both children with their eyes still closed, their heads in their laps. I picked up my little girl and kissed her face and told her everything was going to be fine now. I was going to keep them safe. I hurried into the house, grabbing pillows, blankets, and medication, and we headed down Confed. By that point, the option of going south was no more. We were headed north. I was heading to a dead end, and my heart sank. The 45-minute drive to Fort MacKay took me 7 hours that evening. We settled in the industrial park. I made a bed in the trunk, and I tucked my little family in while I tried to wrap my head around what was happening and come up with a plan. The fire was moving, and I knew if I stayed here, we had the potential of being trapped. I had limited food, and with my mom being a diabetic, I didn't have a lot of time before I knew sugars were dropped. When the road reopened, a group of us decided our best option was to try to drive through Fort McMurray and head south again before the road closed. One way in and one way out. I needed to head back into the danger to save my family. I gave my family dusk masks as we approached the city. The smoke was so heavy that I could barely see the lights of the car in front of me as I drove. It wasn't long before I caught up to the traffic that had left the night before. We were at another standstill. By the time I reached Lac La Biche, I knew I could go no longer. I needed to stop and rest my own body. I was dealing with my own medical issues. I had been diagnosed with cervical cancer and was going through chemo and radiation. It took a total of 15 hours driving in my car before I felt safe enough to close my eyes and rest. A 3.5 hour drive that took me 15 hours. I live in Canada and I am a Canadian. I should feel safe in the community that I live in Fort McMurray, and I don't. My family trusts me to make decisions in their best interest, and I am putting my trust in you all, my elected officials in Edmonton, my elected officials in Ottawa, to please take care of myself and my family. Thank you.
Melissa, thank you very much for your presentation. And these are the reasons that we talk about the absolute imperative mental wellness for people. You delivered one of the most powerful stories you possibly could have with the strength and courage like I can't even imagine. I congratulate you and your family for getting through it as you did, and certainly as we go through considering what other remarks will be for us this evening, there's no doubt that many people have had similar experiences and they care as much about this as what you do and what the Recovery Committee have made recommendations to Council. While we won't comment what our opinions are at this point, we will go through the process. You are invited to stay here through that entire duration. But thank you again for sharing your story. Members of Council, nothing for your presenter on the screen, so we'll go to the next delegate here this evening. And this presenter will be Mr. Wayne Woodhouse. Wayne, if you're in the audience this evening, you'll get to take the floor and be our second presenter on the topic.
Good evening, Madam Mayor and Council. I'm here as a local business owner to show our support to the East Clearwater Highway. As an employer on May 3rd, had 100 people working for us at the time, both north and south of town. The challenges working with our employees and their families to reunite them. At times, we had employees that were not reunited for up to 24 hours, and we had two sets of employees that were not reunited for 48 hours. Luckily, we had the oil sands operations to the north that provided air services and everything, and and we did manage to get them back together in Edmonton in time eventually. But I've been a resident up here for 20 years now. I think it was in 1995 we had a wildfire that closed down the highway for approximately 4 or 5 days at that time. We have had other accidents and things that have limited our access, and I see this as an opportunity to not only give our residents some kind of, strength that, this is a great community and there is other options and they can move around and be safe here, but also I see this as an opportunity as a field of dreams for this municipality to, in the next 20 years, to continue to grow, to continue to encourage people to be here, because hopefully it provides an avenue to allow employers to encourage people to be here and have better access to the community as opposed to flying in and flying out. And with that, that's my comments.
Thank you very much. Certainly appreciate the presentation from you as well. And I'm going to check in with Council. If you have any questions or comments for the presenter, now would be the time. None, so thank you, sir, very much for the time you've shared. The next item on our list this evening is a presentation from Mr. Gillis Huizinga. Gillis, if you're in the audience and willing to come forward, we'd like to hear from you next.
Good evening, Madam Mayor, Regional Council. My name is Gillis Huizinga. I'm of 128 Rogers Crescent. Thank you for the opportunity to address Council tonight. I'm speaking on behalf of the Urban Development Institute, Wood Buffalo Chapter. We endeavor to represent the builders and land development industry in our region. Provincially and locally, this industry is the second largest economic mover that impacts our economy, both in jobs and economic activity. With us tonight, attending in the audience, are members of our board of directors, past president Wes Holodniuk, Director Carmelo Daprosida, and Stephen Audi, and missing tonight are several of our past presidents, but they are here in heart and mind because they've worked on this issue so tirelessly over the many, many, many years past. In particular, Mr. Cliff Maron, a well-known face to this council. We're attending tonight's council meeting to give our wholehearted support to the endeavors outlined in the committee's report to mitigate the potential impacts of any future disasters, the time and severity of which is unknowable and can take several forms, albeit other raging fires or man-made events arising from the transportation of dangerous goods. I was just reminded today there's 4,000 such events annually through our community along a road that, given its proximity to the hospital, could endanger our entire community. We always hoped such would not occur, yet preparedness may seem a more necessary approach today. In addition, however, to the significant contribution to our community's safety this undertaking will create, there are other economic factors that assist in the validation of this endeavor. In speaking with other economic drivers of our community, I was reminded that such a route would be the driver of the Live in Fort McMurray agenda, hoping to ensure access to the oil sands in the north will remain reachable from living in residents, supporting the economics and the economies and the small businesses of our urban and rural communities. A counterbalance, we would hope, to the fly-in, fly-out economic decisions that are made. We support this initiative. We have a letter on file. We assure you of our support for this initiative. We add that much work has been undertaken, and Mr. Giles has reminded me of his stack of these that are out there, and I was just going to highlight the two, the Athabasca Oil Sands Area Comprehensive Regional Infrastructure Sustainability Plan, a.k.a. the CRISP study. This current endeavor, coupled with the jointly sponsored, including the UDI Real Estate Board and the Chamber of Commerce sponsored, Protecting the Investment in Our Future, dated October the 15th, 2015, will give breath to the possibilities of our community, where industry, regional municipality, strive together to set a stage to meet some significant desired outcomes. And I thank you for that.
Thank you very much. And just hang on for a quick moment. Members of council, if you have any feedback, comments for the presenter or questions, now is the time. Seeing none, we'll let you take your seat. We'll go to our next presenter. On my list, I have Lisa Hilsinger. Oh, I said it wrong. Hilsinger. Getting close, I hope. Good evening and welcome.
Good evening, Madam Mayor and members of council. My name is Lisa Hilsinger. And I am the current principal at Holy Trinity High School, but for the past 4 years, I was principal at Father Turcotte School. And being at Father Turcotte School as a principal, I mean, you have many responsibilities, but in loco parenti, acting in place of the parent is a responsibility that every teacher and every educator takes very seriously. But it was very clear to us on the day of May 3rd how important that was to us. And many of us know the feeling of being separated from our loved ones on that day and how difficult it was to get to them and to make sure that we connected before leaving town. And we know the roads were gridlocked and the traffic was barely moving. But for children at school, they had to wait for their parents to come and get them. In some cases, it took several hours for their parents to get there. But what happens to the child that is waiting and the parent doesn't get there? Well, that's our story. An 18-hour journey with a busload of staff and children, with a few granola bars and not knowing where we were going, only north. So receiving frantic phone calls from parents, at least they knew their children were safe. But we didn't have a direction. We didn't have a destination. Finally, we decide to head to Timberlea, to Holy Trinity High School. Luckily, my colleague and dear friend, Councillor Germain, met us at the door, was able to give us some water. Unfortunately, we had very few parents meet us there because they let the buses through, but nobody else behind. So again, we filled up the bus with complete strangers, an elderly woman pulling a suitcase, a family of four with no gas, some employees of local area restaurants, and again, we headed off with a busload. Making connections with parents along the way, finding them on the sides of the road, and dropping off their children, wishing them luck and Godspeed, to finally at midnight reaching Syncrude. At least we had shelter, we had some food, but it was a camp that hadn't been opened for a while, so there was no bedding, no pillows, no blankets, and the water hadn't been turned on in a very long time, so it was quite dirty. But again, the feeling of, are we trapped here? I'm still responsible for the children of other people. We did hear at about 1:30 that the road had opened. So we had to make a decision. Do we stay or do we go? We decided to leave, not knowing whether or not it was the right decision. For ourselves as adults, that's fine. But when you're making those decisions for families, in some cases now, we could not get a hold of them because phones had died. We couldn't get in contact. We had to make that decision to go, to head south and hopefully get to safety. So by about 10:30 a.m. the next morning, we made it to Athabasca, to my father's house. And finally, at 3 p.m. that next day, we were able to reunite the final three students with their families. So the construction of an eastern bypass, would it have changed the events on that day? No. Would it had eliminated the responsibility of the staff and in local parenti? No. Would it have changed an 18-hour bus ride? We don't know. So what would it have done? It would have given us at least one decision. We go south, we go on the eastern bypass, and we wouldn't have had to make those other decisions. You know, so would it have made a difference? Well, imagine you being the parent of that four-year-old on that bus. Imagine being the parent of the child with special needs, or the parent of the child with limited English who has a hard time expressing their wants or fears. And you ask yourself if it would have made a difference to you. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And again, the stories that we're able to have expressed here certainly are more powerful than the decision that we need to make. And so every chance we have an opportunity to give our gratitude to those who served in a capacity greater than for their own needs, what you did for the students, again, you have my heartfelt thanks, knowing that nobody was left behind. Thank you. No lights on by council, we'll let you go as well. And now I'm pleased to bring forward Mr. Scott Garner. Scott, if you're willing to take the podium and give your presentation, you'd be welcome to do so now.
Madam Chair and Council, my name's Scott Garner. I'm pleased to be here. I've been a longtime resident in Fort McMurray, and I'm glad to be back to help in whatever capacity I can personally to rebuild people's lives. I'd like to take this opportunity tonight to speak in favor of the motion made by Mr. Marty Giles and the unanimous support that is carried by the Wood Buffalo Recovery Committee. For many years, all of us living in Fort McMurray speculated what could occur if the one access road coming in and out of Fort McMurray was cut off. For over a decade, I was the chairman of the hospital and regional health authorities in this area. And I have personally thought about that, as well as the bridge that was mitigated now, many days and many nights. No longer do we need to speculate. In May, the timber dry conditions fueled the wildfires that raged hell on this city and this region. We felt it, we lived it, and the nation saw it. This motion's primary reason includes the construction of the East Clearwater Highway for safety purposes as its primary objective. Yet there are secondary benefits, which include reduction in ground travel and associated transportation operating costs, as well as greater access to other networks and the increasing production of labor. The Conference Board of Canada has made a careful examination of the infrastructure spending and concluded that for every $1 billion in spending, there are 16,700 jobs supported for 1 year. Many of these jobs are just not concentrated in the construction industry, but they expand to manufacturing, business, transportation, and financial sectors. The investment in this highway will have immediate benefits for the Alberta economy and provide some financial dividends well into the future. It will increase the GDP and enhance the economic performance of our region and our country. On a personal note, on May 3rd, I was part of a handful of dedicated employees that remained at Syncrude and welcomed, fed, and housed evacuated citizens, hundreds of them. That event demonstrated without parallel the best of people. I saw, however, the absolute exhaustion and horror on the parents' faces and heard the common experiences, some of which you've heard here tonight, about being stuck in long lines of traffic, one eye on the inferno that was consuming their homes and business, and one eye on the gas gauge, for fear that they would not get out of their own very neighborhoods. The extreme heat of the blaze surrounded these long caravans of cars and trucks, and embers raining down upon them, igniting more fires. That night, 88,000 prayers were sent heavenward, and then joined by tens of thousands of others when family and friends outside the region were able to reach by cell phone friends and neighbors and tell them of their desperate plight to escape our community. In addition, Twitter feeds, radio and television broadcasts, Snapchat and Facebook messages literally sent shockwaves across Canada and the world. What the citizens of this region experienced should be a call to arms for all governments. These difficult times require leaders to carefully prioritize both needs and wants. This is not an easy task, and shirking these responsibilities will only create larger problems. This places the burden to act squarely upon the shoulders of elected officials who we have entrusted with our vote to represent and protect us. I recognize the items outlined in the motion present a big ask and come at a time when Alberta's revenues are depleted. The status, however, of our current balance sheet, however, does not eliminate the inherent risk of future wildfire damage to people and property in this region. Supporting this motion is a necessary step to mitigate against such risks. The protections outlined in the motion will give people the confidence to live and work and play in a part of Canada that is warm and inviting, even on our coldest and darkest nights. The governments of Alberta and Canada must understand that the greatest natural resources that are available to us are not found in oil fields or wheat fields or in our majestic mountains, farms, and ranches, but rather they are etched on the faces of our people, everyday Albertans, the people who make Alberta the crown jewel of Confederation.
Thank you so incredibly much for your presentation. That was so very well said.